Yes, sir.
Bani Gani, everyone. Assalamu alaikum. This is Professor Amin Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, along with my excellent and most knowledgeable historian, Joe Hembrick, and my co-host of Conscious Corner. We want to welcome each and every one of you that's listening. And we want to give a special thanks out to Brother Rashiki Maskani for providing us this platform under the auspices of Community Education Network. And we have a strong guest this evening. One of the probably, I would say, grassroots entrepreneurs that grew out the community and has ventured into many businesses. And he's going to share with us the secrets of starting businesses and the importance of entrepreneurship within the Black mind psychic, whether you're Muslim, Christian, Hindu, whatever you are. He's a man that could give you some pointers because he has ventured into many businesses. And I'm going to let him tell you a little bit more about himself and about his strategies. And hopefully that we can learn a lot this evening. So without further ado, we're going to turn it over to Haki Troy Muhammad.
Thank you, sir. I definitely would like to thank the esteemed hosts of the Conscious Corner and also the Community Education Network for inviting me and giving me a place to articulate some of the thoughts and some of the things that we do in our community. And when I say our community, the Most High Elijah Muhammad promised us friendships of all walks of life. You know what I mean? So, for an example, today I had a brother call me and he needed to get a car. And he's one of my bigger brothers in the mosque, and he lost touch. So I introduced him to a brother, Brother Isaac, and he said, "Hey, so is he somebody in the nation?" I said, "No, he's from Syria. He's a Muslim, but he's gonna take care of you like he was in the nation." And he was shocked that I could pick up the phone and call a brother, and say, "Hey, look out for the brother and see what you can do for him." And I had to explain to him that's part of what the promise was, friendships of all walks of life, and being able to execute it based on what you just said, Brother Ra. It don't matter that diaspora, we from Compton or Syria or India or Iran or any of those other Afghanistans, which my wife is here with me. We have friends of that come from all of those sectors of life, and they treat us the same. We got Egyptians, we got friends from Dubai and a lot of places, and that this conversation leads up to being able to have these kind of friends. When we brought up the understanding, brought up the subject about financial literacy, I had to think on that for a while because I speak on it all the time, how we need to be a little, how we should be, not need to be. And I hate to use the word need because whenever people speak, especially to us as Black people, they always tell us what we need to do. And what we need to do should actually say we want to do or we could do. And it's not that we need to do, because I like what Brother Ra always say, we just need to stay Black and stay African. And those are the things we need to do. But when it comes to financial literacy, we all would hope that we could come to some kind of understanding that one of us in the family has to break the cycle. And the cycle of insanity, meaning that me and my wife were speaking and we were talking, and we say, our parents didn't teach us how to do a checkbook, didn't teach us to get a bank account, didn't teach us about credit, none of those things until you needed it and yours was already messed up. And unlike some of us, my mother had already used my name like 9, 10, 11 times on, the utilities and the phone and all those things, being the oldest in the house. But what my mother did teach me is how to call in the utilities and bill collectors and all those and get extensions and those things, which was useful. But when it came to the understanding of how to build credit and how to be financially literate, meaning how to balance the checkbook, how to do this and how to do that, she couldn't teach me what she hadn't been taught. And my mother did accounting, and she, you know, it was funny because she did the books for a lot of companies. She worked at USC when I was growing up in the accounting department. She worked at Barco and Gardena and a few other companies, and ended up over at Harris and Ross. And she did the books there too as well. And over there in, on Firestone. So she ended up there. But she could do their books, accounts receivable, or even accounts payable. But far as our own personal finances, she didn't have the rest of the secret. She didn't understand how this is functioning. So in my journey joining the Nation of Islam, I remember going to my first meeting to see the Most Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan downtown LA at the Bonaventure. And it was, I believe that was to stop the killing, increase the peace, number one. But that's where he introduced the do for self and the clean and fresh products. And I had a job at the time, and he was explaining at that time why we need to do for self and how we need to be respected in our own community. And he said, don't leave your job right away, but make sure you get yourself in a position to leave that job and to do for self. And within about 3 months' time, I left my job, started for self. I created a car wash, just some of the most small, minute things, pager, beeper shop, those little things. But it taught us business. What it did do is teach us how to go and file for a DBA, how to get a corporation, how to set your board up, how to create. At that time, we weren't even doing corporate credit. I didn't even understand how to do corporate credit. It was, you know, I was just spending my own money all the time and spending our own money. And me and my wife, we've been in doing different businesses, and we spend a lot of our own money. But we also create OPM, other people's money, and be able to invest their money with ours. And what we have understood is how to build corporate credit. So nowadays, we don't have to go just on our credit, because business credit and business credit and personal credit runs on different formats. Whereas in personal credit, they checking to see how much your credit card is, you know, close to 50%, past 30% of the balance, and this, that, and the other. You know, and your FICO score go down because you overusing it. They give it to you to use, but then, and then if you don't use it, they penalize you if you overuse past 30%. Now, why would you give me a credit card and only allow me to do 30%? Don't make a lot of sense. But corporate credit, it doesn't matter how much you use. They judging you on when you make your payment. So what we find is corporate credit was always and is a better tool to establish yourself in business. That's don't always mortgage the homes and, you know, the cars and put ourselves and family in that stripe of if this business don't work, the family is devastated because your personal credit just went bad. You know what I mean? See, the funny thing about corporate credit is, hey, if the Rockefellers say, hey, we're going to ready to bankrupt this corporation, that's what we do. And at the day, at the end of the day, you can come back and build another corporation just as fast you built that one. And you can go ahead and still be active and being respected by your family. So one of the things we like to do, and we've been able to take one of our children, and he's following on our footsteps, and he's starting to see, wait a minute, you know what? We always thought mom and daddy was crazy. At the end of the day, look, I'm starting to reap the fruits that they bear. So, you know, he's following our footsteps. He's a part of our corporation. He's established his own business. He's a part of our business. He's starting to see, hey, this is something. So what I've been explaining to a lot of people, the insanity that we all have because we are conditioned the way our parents was taught. It's not their fault. They're teaching us what they know and what they don't know. My mother got on me one day when I joined the Nation of Islam, and she said, hey, you know these people is brainwashing you. And I said, hey, mom, what's wrong with your brain being washed? If we wash our body, we wash our hair, we wash our soul, why wouldn't we want to wash our brain? It took her, you know, about a month and a half, and she come back to me and say, you know, you might have something there, because she's seen a change in her son. She's seen a change that I was able to bring something new to the table, where that incense, that chain has been broken. And it's like, okay, I see that you don't have to do all this wrong to get something financial. You're doing small things, which we find in small, but then she's seen us go big, and she's seen us elevate. She's seen us move. She's seen us get across state lines and actually are building something. She's seen people come and say, hey, your son is being productive in our communities, and he's trying to build something. With that said, where I'm able to take out the should or need to, we can take and say we could, we would like to, you know, and try to use different language to address our kids who hate to be, they don't like to be talked to in a certain manner. They don't want those kind of words where they think you got to do the math, you have to do this. They are learning, they learn from a different creed. So you hope you can show them, but you also let them bump their head a little bit. And I don't like that aspect, because when we grew up, and you did what mama and daddy say do. You know what I mean? And some people, we look at our families and say, hey, this guy, he's lucky. His kids is doing this. They following what they was trying to teach them. Then there's other kids that just don't do that. And we don't know why they wired that way and why not. I mean, same mother, same father, different child do something different from the other one. You know what I mean? They eat the same, they slept the same, they did this, but this one child do something different than the other child. And one of our goals is, if we can get it into the mindset and picking those who are ready to get into the financial literacy, where we can teach one the kids and start them off earlier, that they don't have to go through some of the pitfalls, and we all can benefit with the history, with those kids going back to establish something for the elders. And one of the things we've been looking in Africa and all those places, and the kids now are going back to Nigeria, they're going back to all these other parts of Africa, and they're actually bringing something back from America to help structure their country. My wife's family is from Haiti, and her brother was becoming an engineer. And so I asked him, I said, hey, if you could do one thing, learn how to make toilet paper, and let's let that go back to Haiti. Let's take something from what you're learning and be able to take it back to the country and say, hey, this is what we got. But we don't get the kids that way no more. Other cultures do, but we haven't. So not sure how we can get to the financial literacy and teaching kids how to become entrepreneurs, how to be respectful to our family, meaning that we're trying to build an economic foundation that goes to generations. The beautiful thing about sports now is basketball and football players, and those especially basketball, they're getting generational wealth that their people and their kids should be taking care of for the rest of their life. But even with that generational wealth, a lot of them is still going broke. And to me and you, we're sitting here like, I just can't see how they done lost them many millions of dollars. But when you don't have financial literacy and nobody's teaching, and NBA is really doing a good job at trying to teach the kids the right people to get in touch with, how to invest in different things. And a lot of them is creating that understanding of being a brand. What my wife and myself do, it's about being a brand. It's about being a brand, creating that brand, going into that brand and creating something bigger. We started a company now, Stems Wellness. And with Stems Wellness, we got CBD, Stems Wellness. We're creating our own brand of gummies and hemp this and hemp that and hemp this. All the stuff that we go into Irish moss with hemp and this, all the things we need health-wise that we can take it to a bigger structure. But we also have the cannabis side and STEM wellness cannabis that we're just now opening now. And that's mostly about medical cannabis. And we are attracting the medical cannabis sides and building a brand from there. But a lot of people looking at us and saying, hey, you guys been in this a long time, but here's the catch. Now we're doing distribution. So we didn't took something small and now we are partnered into our own distribution to create our own brands, our own labels. And corporate credit and those things is what we use to get to that level. Gonna yield back to you.
Rather done. Excellent. Just, but give us a little bit of your biography before we open it up to questions, because you came a long ways, brother. I remember all the various businesses you had and all the challenges. You know, we balled. We, our big cat Shaheed, and you know, I learned a lot from big cat
Of
Abdullah
course.
and
Yeah.
Rashad. And
I know you know them all, and Daoud, the whole crew.
all his sons and
Yeah.
all Big Cap sons and all of that. But at the same time, you have your history of just growing up in the hood and then breaking the chain, as you say, based upon the learning from the nation and the honorable minister there, Louis Farrakhan, who encouraged doing for business and really start people off by using the paper and
Yes,
the fish
and the pies.
and yeah. So why don't you give us a little bit about that? Your
Yes,
bio,
sir. Well,
what
as
school
you know,
you
just like you, Big Cat was a number one mentor of mine. You know, I was right there pondering for a long time. And I Cap, he, you know, Cap, he was such a great teacher of men, you know, and I learned how to present my conversations, how to articulate, how to be direct, and how to move the men. Meaning we, you know, we would have officers' classes and things like that to be able to be in front of men and present men to men and be able to sharpen men and teach men. We was doing Shai introduced me to Majid Muhammad with the OK by Dr. Khaled Muhammad. So Dr. Shaheed had called Dr. Khaled and said, hey, Brother Troy is moving along and he needs another mentor far as the medical aspect of personal injury. So Dr. Khaled told shy to give me Majid Muhammad's number, who was a great teacher, and he actually worked with Khaled for years. And I was able to go and be up under Majid, which was rare because he didn't like to teach anybody that much. But with Khaled saying, "Hey, accept Brother Troy to come over here and teach him and put him under your wing," it was a gold mine, and it's something that you know that you really can't how do you say it? You can't buy it. You understand that endorsement was big. So I was able to be up under Majid, and we opened the office over on La Cienega and Centinela. But prior to that, there's some other men there, Mr. Boulder and Uncle Gordon, I called him. And these were some other good, sharp guys out of St. Louis that was familiar with Majid. And they would sit me down. So I always called them the three wise men, because each one of them would sit me down at different times, but they all was familiar with each other, and they would introduce me to different things. So there's times where Uncle Gordon would take me to the farm club, tell me to put my vine on. "Hey, make sure you put your vine on. I'm gonna take you out for lunch," you know. And we go out to the farm club, and we're around these thousandaires and millionaires, and he's like, "This is bigger than golf. You're over here at the farm club. You get to sit down. We're going to lock some deals down. Watch what I'll tell you." Majid would take me over to Starbucks, Magic Johnson Starbucks on La Tierra Centinela, or early morning for coffee. I don't drink coffee, but that's where business deals was going down before work. So we're able to go over there and meet other doctors and meet other physicians and PAs and different things like that, lab techs, all those kind of people. And Mr. Boulder, he taught me. Mr. Boulder is a unique person because he actually is the creator for Johnson & Johnson. He created the Good Fred. You remember we had them Jerry Curls, and he was the one who made Good Fred. He was the one who made the Stay Soft Fro. And when I say this, it's always funny because he's also the person that made what we're calling Awesome today. That Awesome, we started doing car washes, and I had my own car wash, and they showed me how to market that car wash. So Mr. Boulder said, "Hey, take this waterless car wash," and didn't look like much. He showed me how the science to wash in a car, and we created the products. He created the products. I could go in there and tell him I need that Awesome to be as strong as I wanted to. So that Awesome got us into security because one of my friends, Rico, he knew an attorney by the name of Daryl. Daryl was the attorney for Don Cornelius, Ice-T, and the Hughes brothers. So with that, Daryl asked me to come to his office, wash his car. I wash his car. He get me Don Cornelius' car. Don Cornelius had a Rolls Royce with some gum and in his alpaca carpet that was on the floor. And he said,
"You're on mute. You hit the mute button."
"That's it.
You were saying about cleaning Don Cornelius' car."
"Hold on. Can you hear me?"
"Yes. Wait.
I'm off of that Bluetooth." So I meet with Daryl. I wash Don Cornelius' car. I call one of my brothers, say, "Hey, brother, come up here," because I sold him a car wash kit. I said, "Come up here. I'm at this location. I'm washing Don Cornelius' Rolls Royce." So he said, "All right." I said, "Bring all your stuff. Bring your bucket. We wash him that car, and I got three other cars. I got Ice-T's car, and I got the Hughes brothers, the directors, Menace to Society, if you don't know who that is. And Poetic Justice and all those." So I'm like, "Okay." We washed Don Cornelius' car. When I got through a Don Cornelius' car, it was so good. This is the first year that he was getting ready to do the Soul Train Awards. He knew he was in the MOS, and he said, "Hey, Can you get enough brothers to secure the Soul Train Awards? And I told him, yes, sir, we could. So I went in there and negotiated the contract, the deal with him. And I knew it was a fair deal because Daryl's my attorney and he was his attorney. So I asked for what I wanted. He gave it. And that's how the Brotherhood got to the Soul Train Awards. We had two vineyards based on getting Don Cornelius' cars wash. Got to Ice-T's car, we got that. And then now we got the Hughes brothers. So I washed their cars. And at that point, we started doing personal security on the Hughes brothers. They had already had a problem with Tupac. So what we did was we had to bring them in and out of the court, different things like that. We got to be on movie sets doing security. And that was like some of the start of coming back to Cap and say, look, this is what we're bringing back to the table. So for me, it was like not wanting to be one of those little brothers that was always eating from the table. I always wanted to bring back something to the table. So Shy, Cap, he always kind of talked to me different than some of the other brothers, based on knowing me for a long time, and also the way that I moved. It wasn't like, I'm looking forward to everything that came from the mosque to eat. You know what I mean? I was actually bringing stuff to the table to eat. And making sure, I'm still my own man, because I'm that person. Like, I don't like to, Brother Majid say, I don't like to become begging. I like to come buying. And those kind of brothers that taught me, like, it's easy to come buying than it is to come begging, because you get a different respect. So when I talk to people, I always talk to people from a position of buying and not begging. And if I can extract things from you from that position, then it's gravy. You understand? If you can help our cause from a position of buying, not a position of begging, we're not asking for handouts. So that led to, if we go a little further to, so much stuff me and Captain done together, like far as security, and I think we can get into the OJ trial and being right there with Cap. I think I was the youngest person at that time on that detail. Everybody else was a lot older than me, but being in that mix and being able to be treated and respected that I can hold my own with those giants of personalities. I have so many funny stories where Shy would just leave me there as the leader in charge of the other brothers. And they would be mad, like, well, why is he the lead? Because he's, I don't trust you damn niggas. And that was Cap. He just knew that he could trust me and getting the things done and needed to be done at that time. Because I wouldn't come from a perspective of, begging. And I knew how to pick up the phone and call him and say, I didn't understand something. If I don't, I might get called a hypocrite a little bit. But at the end of the day, he knew I'm gonna still come through. And it was just like that. And it was just a trust value with Big Cap. But that was my big brother. We've been a lot of places and a lot of times. And I remember Rigo calling me and telling me when he passed, a lot of people hit me. And I'm like, the love that me and Shy had, it was just from my perspective, it was greater than my father, you know what I mean? But he always called me his little brother, you know what I mean? So he didn't say that's like my son. He always called me his little brother. It was a lot. Like, he knew I would be there. There's plenty of times that it's like he knew, all right, Brother Troy would be there. And I would, if he asked me to do something, it's gonna be there.
You had the discipline. You had the discipline.
No, it's my value.
You had the training and the discipline.
I thank you.
Because I used to train with them too. at when we had the apartment, and then when we opened up the beeper service, and we went into some other businesses, deals, security, and loan, lending money, and making getting people to pay it back. Okay, Mashinda, you have any questions?
No questions right now.
Sister,
can you hear me?
Yeah. Dr.
Yeah,
Shabazz.
I hear you now.
Yeah, Dr. Shabazz, do you have any questions?
I don't have any questions. I'm really excited about the topic. So greetings again, family and Hotep, to everyone. And I hope you all are having a good evening. The financial literacy piece is critical.
Yes, ma'am.
I just feel like it's really important for us to understand how money works, how money's evolving. And that's why I went ahead and got myself in a licensed profession so that I can be of service to my community and be able to help my circle to understand and navigate through that that evolutionary process, because we have to make sure our paper is in order and somebody got to be trustworthy. You know, we can't always go to someone else and then not fully understand or not have the ability to ask the questions to really be able to utilize all the tools out there to build wealth, to have money working for you, because at the pace that the world is moving, like I tell my husband all the time, at the pace that this world is moving, we don't have enough time or resources to keep up with how fast money's moving. We have to learn how to make money work fast for us because, again, there's not enough time or resources. So it is a thing that I teach, that I preach, that I teach professionally, that I teach in my career, to my family, but it starts at home first. So whatever you're learning and whatever you do, try to apply it in your house and make sure that you teach your children and your grandchildren. So that's how you can end those financial curses and be able to establish a good relationship with money.
I've seen some Caucasian families that their cats are rich. Their cats have a corporation and is able to extract, and the cat got credit. You understand? So, I mean, they understand the power of financial literacy. And while a lot of us chasing our tail and we're saying, hey, we don't have enough money today, but we haven't prepared for what's to come. And it's a necessity to put ourselves in position to utilize. And it's not quick, but it don't take all day. Our company here, we actually are in a position where we are even can get trade lines for people that need trade lines legally to boost their credit number, their FICO score. So we can get 5-6 years credit lines because our company has been tied in with different cultures and different people that we've learned, hey, how a lot of people is getting. They said, we're sitting here opening up a credit card and waiting 6-7 years, and we'll never get it that way. Just like sister just said, money moves quick. And not only does it move quick, it all.
You hit the mute again, Toy. There you go. We should be able to hear you now.
I hear you now.
Yeah.
Yeah, money changes quick. The banks right now, they're not lending that well. The interest rates have shot up from stated to now you need to have those papers. Remember when it was non-stated, you didn't need no papers. You could just say, I made this. Now they're checking your tax returns. You know what I mean? You didn't hardly need a check stub. Now they want to check your tax returns. Mm-hmm. So that's how fast money moves, and they're controlling the money. So, you know, you have to double down and be prepared.
Okay. Brother Joe? Brother historian Hembrick, are you there?
I'm here.
You have any questions? No, you into entrepreneurship.
I'm the landlord.
Yes, sir.
Not on to my daughter. I used to take her to me with clothes when she was a little kid. And money is tight. The banks ain't giving up nothing, man. I remember I used to be able to do a refi and pull cash without
Whoa.
hardly doing anything. Now they want to see under my toenails.
Yes, sir.
Money, man. So I just.
Our family just did a refi in Pennsylvania, and it went real smooth to the last day. And the last day, they was like, "Wait a minute!" It was too late because interest rates went up just the last day that was done. You know what I mean? So it already was all approved and ready to go. But other than that, we come right back for a car, and they like, "Hey, we need your tax returns." What do you mean you need our tax returns? Well, we want your business tax returns. And we're not giving you our business tax return. This is for a personal car. This is not for the business, but you got a business account in our bank. Well, yeah, we do, but that's not what we're asking for. And you know, it took about 2 weeks before they channeled back and said, "Hey, this guy is making a mistake. This is just the personal side. It's not the business. When I come to you for the business, I'm not coming for one car. I'm coming for 10." And I just had to let them know we are coming for 10. We're not coming for one. That's when the business side is talking.
Yeah, they make it tough.
Yeah.
Tough right now.
So
Years ago.
a lot of us, if we could join forces with each one, teach one, if we could get together and make it attractive for the kids to say, "Hey, this is what I want." And it's one of the things you said the other day. I heard your conversation when, you know, the kids is looking at the athletes and different things like that. Yeah, they are. And athletes is coming through with Ferraris and Lamborghinis and DeLoreans and all of that. But I talk to kids all the time now, and where I live, I'm looking at 21-year-old kids with the same stuff and just on the video games. And they're playing video games, and they on a video game team. You might not be athletic, but you really got a good finger on that joystick. You're really good there. And one of the things we're looking at is say the drone teams and the video game teams. We're looking into there and saying, "Hey, if we can teach, because the kids that's doing this, they come from an environment that they're not sleep. They're going to college. And if they don't, they pretty much got a handle on a career because they come from something with a trade and they need that money." So we're looking to say, "Hey, can we get our kids, you know, to have an interest in something?" Because one of the things we found is like the kids, a lot of them today, where we wanted to go play basketball and our parents would punish us for playing basketball, baseball, or football outside. Now, kids is punished by putting them outside and telling them they got to go outside and play. They don't want to do nothing. They're not interested. It's a different generation, but it's a different environment. I'm not 100%. A lot of times on what they are, their interests are.
They try to master games. But Joe, you have any other questions?
Oh, that's it.
All right, Rasha Key.
Yeah, I'm listening to him. He made some good points, some real good points. And hey, I think discipline. As children need structure and discipline on a daily basis, and you got to hang on in there. I talked to a parent today where she's saying that she can't she talk to her son until he's until she's blue in her face about him taking care of business, doing the things he's supposed to do in school. And so I had to offer some suggestions to her. And my wife can attest to this. Our youngest daughter, which is 18 now, she's at Cal State Northridge. And we had to sit next to her on a daily basis to make sure she did what she's supposed to do with her schoolwork. And parents have to realize that you have to spend a multitude of time with your children to get them where you want them to go. And so she's doing well now. I mean, it got to the point where, and I tell a lot of, you know, people this, as far as you got to sit with your kid and make sure they do what they're supposed to do. They will get tired of you sitting there and just go ahead and do it because they're so tired of you. So you got to have strategies, you know, and I know you were speaking about how do you make it attractive for them to want to do certain things. Sometimes we have to be creative in our approach, and it don't have to always be yelling, fussing, and fighting. You just got to be creative. So excellent points you're making here, Brother Troy. So keep up the great work, and you know I'm with you.
Yes, and I'm with you. I wanted to add to something you just said. You know, RJ, and you're familiar with RJ. We had to homeschool him at one point, right? And we homeschooled him, and he's sitting right at the table next to us, and he still didn't do his work. We put him in military school, and he still was trying to find a way not to do his work. So finally, when he graduated, I mean, literally, we had to sit him and make him graduate. He had like 15 books he had to read, 4 projects to graduate. And we literally had to sit there and put him next to us to get these projects done. And he still almost didn't do that right, right? But we suggested he go to the military. And I'm not one, because I'm a military brat. I'm not one to suggest anybody go to the military. But he had no drive toward anything. He goes to the military. We did a contract for 6 years. You do 6 years, go there and graduate out of college, and you can do what you want to do. Well, he did what he wanted to do anyway, but he did the 6 years. He didn't go to school, but he's come out. He's going to school. He listens tremendously now. That's what I was telling you. He's right on point. He's getting all A's in college. You know, he's really doing great. The first semester was a trial, but he's kicked in. He's getting all A's. And so every once in a while I say, why did we have to wait so long to get this? And he said, because I just wanted to prove that I didn't want to do that. You know what I mean? And he was just dead set. I just didn't want to do that. And I hate that I did that, because he understands where he could be at now.
Okay.
But he's right there with us. And, you know, he's listening, learning. He see results. And he's opened up his own business. He's a part of our business. And he enjoys it. And he's listening completely. But like he said, he just didn't want to do it. And he just had his mind made up. No matter if you whoop me, you punish me, I sit next to you, I'm just not doing it. And he was just at that mindset. How do you straighten that part up?
Well, the best cure is prevention. Don't let him get that mindset. It's hard. You can control behavior, but you can't control attitudes and emotions. You know, you can make kids wash dishes, but you can't make them like washing dishes. You know, but that has to be an education. And a growth, like he grew. He grew while he was in the service, or he grew.
Yeah.
Reflecting, you know, not just the service, but reflecting and seeing the things that you were trying to tell him while he was out in the service, even though the service was telling them everything you was telling them. the beginning. And
you're right.
Over there, they force you to do it, you know, or you get punished, you know, serious punishment. And
yeah.
Peers, but that's good. I have a couple questions, Brother Troy. And first of all, I just want to say, man, I'm just happy to see you and happy to hear your voice. You know, we were trailblazers in the same area for years.
Yes, sir.
I remember the office down there on La Cienega and Centinela, I think.
Yes,
We had a peace meeting up there once. Big Cap, brother.
Yeah.
And all
yeah.
them. And then at the same time, you know, the training Me and Big Cap.
Yep. Compton
Cap,
College.
Yeah.
The minister wouldn't have made it to Compton if it wasn't for brother, for you, brother. Like, remember, we were trying to get the number in Compton, and Big Cap called you and say, hey, we got to get the leader over at Compton College in a short period of time. And you got him in Compton College in a short period of time.
We had the minister there a number of times, Khalid.
Yeah, a number of times.
All of them. And like you said, Khalid and was a phenomenal leader in training men, you know, the topographical tour and all of that. And at the same time, though, but you had your own legacy you were building as a successful businessman, and even bringing the security that has expanded in the nation. I mean,
yeah,
you start thinking about the brothers that have learned to open up security businesses.
Yes, sir.
Professional services, you know.
Executive services.
Athletes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, y'all brought that consciousness. But the question, you know, but see, you still grew up with your mother, and loved ones around you, but you seem to have broke the chains at an earlier age than most kids. Because I remember you talking entrepreneurship. See, many of us grew up as injured physicians and miseducated, as Cardinal G. Woodson said. You know, they taught us to think in 20th century slave mentality, get a job.
Yes, sir.
Get a job. And, you know, and but Honorable Elijah Muhammad, along with Minister Farrakhan, kept teaching do for self. You know, they talk, you know, they had visions of building hospitals, universities, and
banks,
a property, and things of this nature. And they, some of the brothers in the mosque got it, you know, and they ran with it. Some didn't get it for whatever reason, but it was a beautiful thing to watch grow in many ways. So when I asked you, you know, I want you to just share a little bit about your personal journey, you know, like,
yes, sir.
You know, because you started out talking about how you and your mom were struggling for a minute with regards to her and how she handled business. She handled everybody else's business professionally, but a personal thing. And then what high schools you go to, what colleges,
from the
European standpoint, and how did you get to where you are? And tell us a little bit about the hemp business, going from the sales and marketing to distributing, and how
is
that working? Go ahead.
All right, so I grew up in Compton. My mother and father went to Compton High. I went to Compton High.
What year did they come out?
I think they graduated in 66. My father was Billy Benton. He played a little football at Compton. He ended up leaving Compton. My mother, him got married 66, 65, I think that is. So 66, they got married. They got me in 67. My father went to the Army. So he was a Green Beret over in the Army and a master dog trainer. So my grandmother, both grandmothers was in Compton. My grandmother on my mother's side, she used to own the apartments, them brown apartments right across the street from the tennis courts. My grandmother Peaches, Ida Mae Easton, she owned them apartments right there. And
off of Landra?
No, off Acacia.
Off Acacia.
Right in front of Compton High, right in front of the tennis courts.
Okay.
Yeah. So remember, it's like about four units, three upstairs, one downstairs.
Okay.
So we used to stay in the one downstairs. My grandmother, her father was a farmer. He had the 40 acres and a mule over in Hobart, Oklahoma. Him and all his brothers. One had one in Houston. He had that one in Hobart, Oklahoma, Houston, and in Dallas. Just recently, a cousin of mine and myself, we starting to do some background and history, and we starting to see that it was just more than those three. He had a pretty big family that I don't think he was really close to. And they was all sharps. And each one of them was educators and landowners, blacks. So my great-grandfather was a slave. My great-grandmother was Native American. And so they owned that land in Hobart and was respected in Hobart, Oklahoma, which was hard to do. Mm-hmm. So many years, I would go to, every summer, we'd go to Oklahoma, and I'd be over at my great-grandfather's farm. I seen it. He would take us out on the tractor. I'd get up there. My brother was never into that. Like, my grandmother teach me how to cut the grass, wash the car. My brother, he didn't want to do all that. But me, I always wanted to. So I would cut the grass, and my grandmother give me money. I wash her car. Guess what? I get to drive the car around the corner, down to the corner, turn it around at 9, 10, because I'm tall enough. And now she's teaching me how to drive. So there was reward behind work. She taught me how to cook. I'll sit there and make, you know, I'm going to get reward by doing the cake batter. I'm going to get reward by doing the cornbread, you know, and, you know, you got the understanding and cutting the potatoes. And you start learning that cooking is one of my things now. I love to cook based on, you know, being in that kitchen with my grandmother. Went to Compton High, ended up going to NAU on a basketball scholarship. And didn't realize that Flagstaff was a pretty racist state. And being in Hobart, Oklahoma a lot, and Oklahoma and family from there, you know, being from Compton, you don't understand the racist. We didn't see it that way. It was just cops or this, that, and other. We had different problems with that. You know what I'm saying? But now I'm over here at 17, and you know, people calling you the N-word when they get drunk and this and another. Wait a minute. This is new. Usually where we come from, white kids see us, they start moving away from us. You understand? And we got some cowboys. But I was blessed to go to summer school my sophomore year. And I met a lady by the name of Lois Starvey. And she only taught class in the summertime. She was a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant who had married a black, well, not at that time. She was married to a white man and had two white kids. And she had taken her kids out of the white schools, put them into all black schools. And she, being an educator, she got to teach at the all black schools and divorced her white husband and married her a real tall black man. And I took her class. It was called The White World of Racism, Sociology. I had no idea what this class was going to be about. When I walked in there, it was like a 400 level class, and I'm only a sophomore. But somebody directed me over there and said, this is going to be a good class for you. I walked in there, and the class was put in a circle, and we had to speak. I didn't have a voice yet. I was kind of introverted at the time. Growing too fast, didn't like really talking that much to everybody. But you had to talk in this class. That's how you got your grade. And I started speaking. And as I'm speaking, I captured the audience of the class. And she said, you know, you had control of the class. I said, did I? I didn't even know, you know. And she brought me back the next semester of summer school and paid for me to come out and speak to the next class. And I took her class the following summer, writing to be published. And this lady started giving me black books. W.E.B. Du Bois. And she told me that there's one black literature class that's taught every 3 years. And this class will be offered by one professor taking next semester. Go and sign up right away because it goes quick. We in Flagstaff, Arizona. But prior to that, she got me W.E.B. Du Bois, and then she took the book back from me and said, don't read that. And she brought me Soul on Ice, Eldridge Cleaver. And she said, now read this one. And after that, she brought me Malcolm X. And she said, read that one. And she kept bringing me books, Muhammad Ali and different things. And I said, hey, my mother got this book. So we was able to get a conversation, a relationship. And she told me before, and she had a book. I mean, I had to bring this up. She had a book that she had written, which was called The Glass Ceiling. She coined and phrased that phrase, the glass ceiling, how, you know, women can't make it through the glass ceiling. That was her that came up with this phrase and wrote the book on breaking that glass ceiling. And she was really good. She helped to help me start writing, because I could write but couldn't write. I could read but couldn't comprehend. I couldn't articulate. And she showed me something. She said, you know, you're very smart, but you think faster than you write. So you take this class with me. I'm going to show you how to write. I'm going to show you how to get past the punctuations. I'm going to show you how to get to that. And she did. So she helped me. But how I realized that I needed to be different is because I seen how basketball is great. Basketball did a lot. I went to my coach as a freshman and asked him, hey, can you give my brother a scholarship? Well, he hooked him up with a junior college scholarship in Western. My mom didn't ask me. Nobody asked. I just understood. I figured out my wealth. I understood. I figured out, hey, they like me. Let me do something here. Let me ask. Let me expand on the equity that I've been getting with this coach and see if my brother can capture. But he didn't succeed in what he needed to do for that. But at the end of the day, they didn't hold that against me because of my equity, because I continue to be a good person and I can continue to do what I need to do. So when I come back home, this lady, Miss Darby, told me, I would like to see you find your way to the Nation of Islam. This is for you. This is for you. This is something that you need. It's right up your personality. You listen to the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad's teachings and Minister Louis Farrakhan. She lived in Sedona, so she was familiar with the Nation of Islam being in Phoenix. And she knew a lot about the teachings. And she was like, right up your alley. This is personally for you. Listen, look, and learn. And do what he tell you to do, because you're going to be successful. And I give her a lot of credit that she had brought that to my attention. And I can remember when I went to the Nation and my mother's, I had got a job. And Big Cap and Dr. Khaled helped me to get a job right across the street from Mas 27 over there on Western. And there was a halfway house over there. So I go and could apply for the job. All right, I've been doing this. I had this and that and other. My background's good enough that I'm able to go into this. And Shy like, okay, well, we know the owner over there. We'll get you in. That way we know, you know, we got you. So I got in there and I started working. And that was before we go to see Minister Farrakhan on that speech I was telling you about. And we was doing work. I know if you remember us having the black outfits with the Tams with Dr. Khaled. And so I went into the halfway house and I captured the brothers their attention and talked them out of bringing in the Catholic and the Christian preacher. And I talked them into, because majority ruled. So I talked them into coming over to the mosque with me. And I took 40 brothers to the mosque across the street. And that was the end of Brother Troy's job. Because they're like, wait a minute. How did you pull that off? So I called the brothers. I got security to come with me. And we took all those brothers over to the mosque and fed them. And we started getting them little jobs. And my job was to help them get jobs as a counselor. And they said, hey, you're being too respectful to the brothers. The men in here, they're inmates. And I said to the lead, I said, hey, sir, with all due respect, these guys as old as my daddy and my mother. I'm not getting ready to be disrespectful to them when they haven't been disrespectful to me. And they said, well, you know, you really can't do this job. Well, they was trying to find a way to fire me, but I was really good at what I did. So From there, with that understanding that came from the minister Louis Farrakhan, that I knew my place wasn't to be in a 9-to-5. So my mother got mad at me and said, "Hey, you got a good job. You're gonna mess your Social Security up." And this and another. I say, "Mom, when it comes to you getting Social Security, you're not gonna get Social Security. It won't be no Social Security." And I brought her the facts, and she said, "Get out of here." And God bless her soul. When she did qualify for Social Security, they moved the age up, and then they gave her a little bit of money. And she come to me and said, "Hey, so I need a little help here." And I was like, "Okay, but you don't remember that conversation when I said you wasn't going to have Social Security. You worried about me. I'm worried about you. You know, we need to do more for self than depending on this group of government to take care of us when we can take care of ourselves." So my position is, why let somebody else take care of our family when we can take care of ourselves? So even with this inflation, or when we seen the pandemic and all those things, my wife and myself say, "Hey, it don't matter to us in what we do, because as long as you give the people stimulus, I don't have to apply for it. I don't need no stimulus. As long as the community is getting paid, I'm going to be paid." So that's the position we take, and that's the position we still take. We don't need it. We get it because the community is okay, then we're going to be okay, especially when it comes to wellness. So we started the wellness aspect about 2016, 2015, and we got into the cannabis delivery aspect, and we start studying, and the more and more we studied, the more and more we understood the wealth and health. And so we was able to start doing manufacturing some of our own pens and getting the right cannabis that was CBD heavy. Then we started understanding what cannabinoids works for this and works for that, that's in direct relations to the body. And so we dove really deep into that. When we got into there, we started having these platforms is available, Weed Maps and other things. And I was one of the first to say, "Shove it. I felt like I was working for them." See, I'm back to working for somebody else and paying them to work for them. And I was like, "Shove it." And they like, "Are you serious? You can't survive without us." I said, "Well, we'll show you." So at that point, what we did was start studying and figuring out how to be in control of our own destiny, creating and storing our own data. Because when we realize, hey, our data is in their platform, they're not giving it back out. So I'm a firm believer to, hey, we do our own website, and we didn't know what we was doing at first. So we hired a lot of people, went through 8, 9 websites, didn't understand the back end to the front end, which we do now. And at the end of the day, now we are value to people. We just now, one of the distro guys just pulled up and dropped off while I was talking a bunch of products because of our website and our data and the reach we have. That, hey, let me get you this. And instead of you paying for that, hey, let me get this over to you guys, and you can come back at me later. Because at the end of the day, we just studied your website. We had no idea that you had that much control and control of our own destiny, control of our own communities. So we have a pretty big reach, Orange County, the Inland Empire, Pasadena, San Gabriel. And now we're getting ready to take off in Los Angeles and move forward. Distribution is really the key, because that's set for Wrigley's. That's set for Benson and Hedges. That's set for all those people. So for us to have a foot in to the distro aspect, and distro comes with manufacturing. So now we can license some of our own brands and control our brands and know what's in the products from the rooter to the tutor. So we know the wealth and the health parts that's going in, and we're not putting a lot of other negative aspects in our products.
Brother Roger King, does anybody have any questions they want to ask Trump before we close out? Okay,
No, thank
brother,
you.
go ahead.
No, thank you. All is well.
Right, Machinda, brother Hendrick. All right, Roger King, you want to tell us who's on next week? I mean, Wednesday.
Yes, sir. Thanks a lot, Brother Troy. Thanks a
Thank you,
lot.
sir.
We have, well, on Wednesday we got Miss Kalisha Beard. She's a licensed clinical social worker. And on the following Wednesday is our second year anniversary. We got Brother Ronnie Roberts coming on again, educator Ronnie Roberts. So that's what we have going for the next couple of weeks.
Okay. Well, look here,
Beautiful.
Brother Troy. Oh, words cannot express the appreciation for your wealth of knowledge, experience, and your success as an entrepreneur in many ventures. And brother, I know the hood appreciate your growth and your development. I know you will put brothers to work in all different fields, from security to the distribution. And to that. And I know that between you and your wife, y'all doing what y'all can for Haiti's, that's in struggle, against white oppression. So we just want to thank you, man, a million times for being here and sharing what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Mr. Faircott inspired you, as well as your history with your mom and the other people that you worked with that you named, Masjid and all the brothers, when it comes to Ayatollah, all the brothers and then
Yes, sir. Ayatollah, we didn't even get into Brother Ayatollah. That's a whole nother, that's a whole nother, and that's a good brother. Yeah, a lot of stories there.
Arashiki taught his son at Centennial. Yeah, and
Yeah. He's pulled us to the side. I'm gonna give you a quick story. I remember coming home when I first got in the nation, and I told her, say, hey brother, you went to college, huh? I said, yeah. He said, what you study? I said, sociology. He said, well, what a black man tall as you gonna do being social? And I looked at him for a long time. I said, what are you talking about? And he kept at it, he kept at it. And he got me to understand exactly what he was saying. And he was very instrumental in a lot of things that we've been able to do, definitely.
Man, I told that he had me speak at his mom's transition.
Yes.
And so,
That's one of my big brothers, Abdullah.
oh, yeah.
He looks out. He was really one of my key people that I would talk to, and he always was great at advice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, he,
Yeah.
he came from the special educational institution.
Yeah.
And
I've spent a long time with Brother Abdullah. Believe me, he was our first minister in the garage. We started off in the garage at Shaheed's house. So, it went from the garage to the parks.
Oh, okay. Excuse me. Did
Yes,
you say
sir.
Ayatollah or Abdullah? Which one?
The Ayatollah is one brother, and then Abdullah. That's
So, which one are you talking
you know
about?
Abdullah. You know Abdullah.
Yeah, I know
The
Abdullah, but which one are
Ayatollah.
you talking about? I think Ross said Alatola, right?
Yeah, the Ayatollah of Bompton, Brother Marvin. Yeah.
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 That's who you
He's
mentioned,
about
Rob.
the Ayatollah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Ayatollah.
Man.
Yeah.
What can I tell you, man? We had so many deep experiences in the struggle, and we're gonna continue the struggle,
Yes, sir.
and so we like we had I mean, we had the minister at Northridge College. We had him at
Whoa,
Palm Beach
remember that?
State. We had him in Compton.
Yeah.
Brother, I mean, we did it. You know, I used to speak before the minister sometime.
Yes,
And
sir.
you know, it was I well, I don't even want to get in.
There's a lot to get into, brother. I
But I
understand.
was at the Bonaventure meeting. There was two at the Bonaventure. One was the
Remember
one
that one time that
that
JDL came up there? Khaled was
was
there. He had to go chase the JDL off the area. They was talking about killing the minister.
yeah, that was at one of them this of the man sport, one of the forum, not the forum, but the downtown where the Lakers were.
Downtown, yeah. At the Bonaventure downtown. Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, he was at a state arena that night when Khalid chased. He kept and said, he dared him to say death to the minister.
Irv Rubin and the boys.
Yeah, we had Irv Rubin on the run. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And man, he ended up, they say he killed himself in prison, but I think he over in Israel. You
I
know?
Believe he in Israel too.
Yeah. I think that was because, you know. Well, anyway, he went to
Yeah,
prison.
We know that goes even deeper. We don't need to go that far.
So anyway, brother, thanks again. And if
Thank
you want
you,
to come on again, just contact me. I told him my number, and we're going to put this on YouTube so you can refer brothers that want to be inspired to start their own business. They can listen to your lecture. All right. Sounds
Yes,
good.
Sir. Well, we're going to come back to you, brother, and definitely try to start something that we can put in our community and get something going in Compton. And I know you can be instrumental and like you always been in helping us get to that stage.
Well, you know, I'm still right here, me and the mess of Latinos.
Yes, sir.
I'm still here. And so I can't move, man. If I woke up and a bunch of strange people running around me talking about how you doing, I go crazy.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, Brother Rashiki, let's end it all up. All right.
Thank you. Thank
all
you
right,
and your esteemed host. That you allowed me to come in on your platform, and you all have a great day.
All
Thank
right,
you.
My brother.